welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Monday, April 3rd, 2023. Some senior South Sudanese officials express anger at a move by the Biden administration to extend national emergency on South Sudan.
Foreign friends have continued to play the role of doubting promises by occasionally dampening our spirit through unhelpful actions such as renewal of sanctions and arms embargo.
And Human Rights Commission in South Sudan says the situation in the country has not changed.
Patterns of human rights violations and violence have kept repeating themselves. In a sense, they're cyclical.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Human Rights Council has renewed the mandate of the Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan. The Commission released a report today insisting violence and human rights violations have continued for years in South Sudan with little or no accountability. Bani Afako is a United Nations Human Rights Commissioner for South Sudan. He tells Nabil Biagio the South Sudan government must end impunity and hold perpetrators accountable for rights abuses, including attacks on civilians and extrajudicial killings.
Patterns of human rights violations and violence have kept repeating themselves. In a sense, they're cyclical. And we say this is because the ones responsible for perpetrating the violence and the violations have not been held to account at all or in any timely manner. And this is encouraging the resort to violence. This is encouraging the attacks on civilians, horrific attacks that we have seen across the country, which includes sexual violence, which includes forced displacement of populations, which includes killings, and more recently extrajudicial killings as well. And perpetrators of these crimes and those who hold responsibility because of their command oversight or because they're in a superior position that have failed to stop these violations and atrocities have not been held to account. And because of that, there's a climate and a culture of impunity, which means that we keep seeing the same kind of violations repeating themselves over and over again.
The report you released today names certain states where these alleged violations seem to happen, to occur more often than other places. It even names individuals, including a governor in South Sudan, that is accused of criminal violations. Tell me a little bit about that.
I mean, there are certain parts of South Sudan which one would call hotspots. One of the characteristics is that these are really across the country. You'd see that we have mentioned not only Upper Nile, Unity, Warap, but also the Equatorias, central western Equatoria, where there are also violations. And on this occasion, we have named individuals who have been responsible for violations, particularly some of the more egregious ones. All South Sudanese who are online and have followed and heard reports of extrajudicial killings that took place in the middle of last year, where one of the governors was involved. We've also named, in the case of Unity State, commissioners who have been county commissioners who have been responsible for mobilization of militia and essentially sending them out to fight and to attack villages. And in the wake of the violence, there have been very many atrocities and human rights violations. And we took the steps to name these individuals because not much has been
just
done.
Just for clarification, the governor we're referring to is Joseph Montuil. Is that correct, the governor of Unity State?
That is correct. And the government has not taken the steps to hold him to account, despite undertakings to do so, despite calls by the Council of States and others that there should be investigations. What we're calling for is credible investigations into what are serious allegations. And we've put in the report the basis for those allegations. We've set out the evidence that appears to show the presence and participation of the governor and others around these extrajudicial killings. And we say that this needs to be looked into urgently. It needs to be looked into further. And the ball is very firmly in the courts of the government to do this. And we think this is important because it will send a signal to everybody, including those who are in responsibility and leadership, that they can't take the law into their hands, into the hallmark of the rule of law, that when there are violations, the state intervenes to investigate it and to hold to account those who are responsible. Even without criminal accountability, there ought to be administrative and political accountability over those who fail to exercise their power as expected by the law and the appointing authorities.
That's Benny Afako, the UN Human Rights Commissioner for South Sudan, speaking with VOA's Nabil Biagio from Oxford in the United Kingdom. Some South Sudanese government officials say the Biden administration is interfering into South Sudan's affairs. The acting Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation, Deng Dao, made the comments after the U.S. extended national emergency for South Sudan beyond 2023. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai reports from Juba.
On April 3rd, 2014, former U.S. President Barack Obama issued executive order declaring a national emergency to deal with unusual extraordinary threat to the national security and foreign policy of the United States due to the situation in South Sudan. Last month, the Biden administration extended the national emergency beyond 2023, citing threats to peace, security, or stability of South Sudan and the surrounding region. Speaking at the joint press conference over the weekend in Juba, the acting Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation, Deng Dao, says the situation in South Sudan has improved and the United States should stop the continuation of the national emergency for South Sudan.
Some of our friends, foreign friends, have continued to play the role of doubting Thomases by occasionally dampening our spirit through unhelpful actions such as renewal of sanctions and arms embargo and justified condemnation at the Human Rights Council. And just yesterday, March 29, through the renewal of what the United States government called notice on the continuation of the national emergency with respect to South Sudan.
The notice of the continuation of national emergency of South Sudan mentioned widespread violence and atrocities, human rights abuses, recruitments and use of child soldiers, attacks on peacekeepers, and obstruction of humanitarian operation in South Sudan. South Sudan's Minister of Information, Communication and Postal Services, Michael McQuay-Lueth, says the government of South Sudan is discouraged by the actions of the Biden administration. McQuay says the government of South Sudan will continue to implement the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement.
The roadmap, as it is now, is in progress. The roadmap was operational from the 23rd of February. That is about 1 month and something now, and a week. But there are those who are becoming impatient and saying the roadmap is not progressing. It is not being implemented. I don't know how do they read the roadmap. This is the situation. We are implementing the roadmap and progressing very well. But some of our people here, some of us here, whether we are South Sudanese or non-South Sudanese, are becoming impatient, as if they thought that the roadmap would be an event, not a process.
Last week, The Troika countries of the UK, Norway and the United States issued a statement calling on South Sudanese leaders to complete some key provisions in the 2018 peace deal. Albina Akol Attak-Mayom is the Minister of Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management, says the government will provide protection to humanitarian aid workers across the country.
Because of this crisis that we are in, as the government of South Sudan and people of South Sudan, plus natural disasters, our people are hungry. And indicators are too huge. This is why the government is putting all the efforts so that these things are addressed. And we always welcome our partners to help us in this. This is why if these incidences happen, we don't accept it as the government. We will immediately take measures so that we put things right. And this is what we did with our partners. We called them, we had an understanding. All the NGOs that are working in humanitarian issues.
The three senior South Sudanese government officials say the implementation of revitalized peace agreement is on track despite several challenges like sanctions and arms embargo imposed on the country in 2018 by the UN Security Council. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
Still in Juba, South Sudan's vice president in charge of service cluster, Hussein Abdulbaghi, has warned individuals or groups occupying schools in Wau, Juba, Rumbek, and Yambio to vacate these learning centers within 2 weeks. Addressing reporters in Juba today, Abdulbaghi says any group who disobeys his directives will be arrested and persecuted in the court. For VOA News, Rose Keji Benjamin reports from Juba.
Vice President Abdulbaghi says any group or individual who continue to occupy a land belonging to a school will be arrested. He says his office has given land grabbers 4 weeks grace period to vacate schools' land across the country.
I wish to inform the general public that all the illegal occupants of school lands are hereby notified to vacate the lands within 4 weeks' time from now. Failure to comply with the above directives will lead to the following measures. One, the government will apply the laws against those who refuse to adhere to the stated order. Number two, demolition of illegal buildings across the country will be carried out in compliance with the court directive. Number three, the state authorities are hereby directed to provide details, information of a school illegal occupied by squatters in their territories.
The vice president in charge of service clusters says individuals who grabbed school lands in several states across South Sudan were given notice to vacate the school lands.
Identified them. Most of them are in Juba, some are in Wau, and some are in Western Equatoria, some are in Awil, and many others around the country. Practice had been carried out so long time ago, and we have to put it to an end. Even last week, Nakon, one of the towns of Warabi State, we got in front of the entrance of the school, we got people are having a shop, and they are using shisha. And this is very dangerous for our kids. So there are many of them, and we are going to state by state, and we are going to demolish them.
He says some individuals have even started businesses on school lands, adding that such businesses will affect school children.
This time will be different. Last time we gave the directive to the governors, some of them they didn't abide by, and that is why we commend General Rintuin Mabio because he's the one who implemented our directive. This time will be different because I'm going by myself to supervise the demolition of this school land which are occupied by the market business. Market places to be.
In 2015, Human Rights Watch says South Sudanese leaders should help end widespread military use of schools by both government and opposition forces. South Sudan's army issued a military order prohibiting the soldiers from using the school for military purposes, but these orders were never followed. Abdulbaghi says land grabbers disobey his directives will be arrested and prosecuted in the court. For VOA News, I am Rose Keji Benjamin in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some women working with non-profit groups in South Sudan say working in a female-dominated environment can be challenging. Stay tuned for that story.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best advice you have ever gotten?
Got an advice from my mom. She encouraged me to work hard. That she told me, and a very successful woman is a very hardworking woman.
The great one I can remember is the one my father gave to me to study hard. Actually, he was on his, I can say, maybe a deathbed. He was so ill. He had a stroke and he was so helpless. He couldn't do anything for me. That was the last day I even saw him. It was like, my son, study hard.
Is from my father. He has always told me that I shouldn't be afraid to learn new things and to take up new challenges, because he said that you're only afraid to take up new challenges when you haven't tried it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Many Christians are marking Holy Week now ahead of Easter next Sunday. In Rome yesterday, Pope Francis celebrated Palm Sunday at the Vatican, the start of Holy Week for Roman Catholics. Thousands of people waved palm and olive branches yesterday as Pope Francis was driven into the Vatican for Sunday's service.
Per partecipare alla gloria della risurrezione, egli è Dio e vive e regna con te nell'unità dello Spirito Santo. Per tutti I secoli dei secoli.
Amen. Speaking in Italian, Pope Francis gives a blessing to the faithful there at the Vatican. He says they take part in the glory of resurrection of God, who is with you in the unity of the Holy Spirit for all the centuries and centuries. Amen. On Saturday, the Pope left a hospital where he was treated for bronchitis last week. In Nigeria, hundreds of people took part in a Palm Sunday procession in Lagos outside the Holy Cross Cathedral. The Reverend Raymond Medo talks about the procession.
The procession on Palm Sunday is very important in Christendom because it signals for us the beginning of the Holy Week, when we celebrate the death and resurrection of Jesus. On this day, many years ago, Jesus walked the streets of Jerusalem and he was heralded as the King of the Jews. But for us as Christians today, we salute and recognize him not just as King of the Jews, but the King of the whole world, our own King, the one who is the Prince of Peace.
In Jerusalem, thousands of Christians from around the world took part in an annual Palm Sunday procession. This woman gave her name as Evelyn. She is from Guatemala. She lives in Israel, where she guides Christian pilgrimage to holy
sites. The importance is huge because we are Christians and we want to show to everybody that we are here and that we are celebrating after 2,000 years the same day, the same procession, and the presence of all of us is very important today.
A group of women calling itself Network of Women in the Field of Logistics in South Sudan marked their one-year anniversary on Friday to coincide with the closing of the Women's Month. Christina Otis, who heads the Office of Humanitarian Assistance at USAID in South Sudan, says the country's infrastructure is underdeveloped, making it difficult for aid agencies to transport relief items across the country. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai has details from Juba.
A group of women working in the field of logistics in South Sudan formed the network to address challenges facing women logisticians working with organizations in South Sudan. Natalie Emery is a logistics officer who co-founded the network. She says the group lacks funding for building the capacity of 150 logisticians in South Sudan. The United Nations says South Sudan has a unique environment for humanitarian aid agencies, adding that widespread insecurity continues to limit humanitarian assistance operation across the country. The UN estimates 9.4 million people are likely to face humanitarian crisis due to conflict and climate shocks between April and July this year. Christine Ortiz, director in the Office of Humanitarian Assistance with the U.S. Agency for International Development in South Sudan. She says USAID is supporting the logistics cluster and implementing security measures for humanitarian operation in South Sudan.
As we know, South Sudan is facing one of the world's largest and most complex humanitarian crises, with more than 9.4 million people projected to require assistance in 2023. The logistics sector here in South Sudan faces a really unique set of challenges that you are all working so hard to overcome. For example, South Sudan's infrastructure remains one of those underdeveloped, making it difficult to transport aid. Moreover, severe flooding restricts access to large portions of the country during rainy season, and humanitarian assistance serves as a vital lifeline to those communities who are trying to get the assistance to.
Asunta Santa is a logistics officer with a nonprofit organization in Juba. She says previous misperception attached to women is changing in South Sudan. She says women have stepped up to offer their professional services to international and national organizations addressing humanitarian crisis in the country.
That narrative is changing currently because of the so many women in logistics now, and I am a part of the so many women. And so the fact that we get the opportunity to do this job, and also men are having the opportunity to see that we can do this job and we add more to it than they actually thought we wouldn't. And so over time, they're believing more in women being able to do logistics because of the fact that we are given these roles wherever we work.
Zura Mustafa, a member of the logistics cluster, says finding a career in the field of logistics in South Sudan can be challenging due to several factors.
The fact that it is being seen as a male-dominated field, and also looking at our cultures in most times, for example, if at all a girl wants to pursue a career in logistics, he or she will be denied because the fact that it is being seen as a male-dominated work.
Women in Logistics Network was established in March 2022 to create the network for building the capacity of women working in the field of logistics in South Sudan. The group has brought together over 100 female logisticians across the country, sharing their experiences working in a male-dominated profession. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
April 4th marks the release date of the State Department's 22nd To Walk the Earth in Safety report, issued by the Office of Weapons Removal and Abatement and the Bureau of Political Military Affairs. Its goal is to highlight the United States' accomplishments in conventional weapons destruction. Indeed, the United States is deeply involved in humanitarian demining programs the world over. Since 1993, the United States has provided more than $4.6 billion for the removal and destruction of unexploded ordnance, improperly secured small arms, light weapons, and munitions. This is crucial work because it saves lives, but it is just part of the story. We see a number of really positive effects from the conventional weapons destruction program, said Karen Chandler, Acting Deputy Assistant Secretary for Programs and Operations in the Bureau of Political Military Affairs. One is gender mainstreaming, she said.
In some of the areas where women are able to work as deminers, 60% of the female deminers are the sole breadwinner for their family. We also have women in all aspects of the organization, including as EOD, explosive ordnance disposal personnel. There are very brave women out there who are willing to go out and do this dangerous work. And in places like Vietnam and Sri Lanka, we actually have female-led demining teams, which is very exciting to see.
It really provides tremendous economic opportunity to women, said Ms. Chandler. Then there's the question of food security and economic prosperity.
When farmers are able to return to their land and farm it without fear, then we can see orchards blooming again, and we can see rice fields producing again. When people are allowed to return to their communities, life can start to go back to normal a little bit after a conflict.
Finally, there are the environmental aspects of it as well, said Ms. Chandler.
In places like Africa, we've seen wildlife corridors that have been contaminated by explosive remnants of war. And so once you have these native animal populations being able to move freely, then that bolsters tourism and economic development in the surrounding area as well.
Once an area has been demined, we see development starting to take place again, said Ms. Chandler. We're looking at life being able to return to a more normal level after we've had clearance operations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And that's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now leave you with Ras Corby and the song Beled Jadid. Listening to Ras Corby and the song Enden Abelet Jadid. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Nabil Biagio and Kwame Ofori, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.